This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica stations, and watch us on Free Speech TV Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. President-elect Donald Trump and his Vice President, Governor Mike Pence of Indiana, made an appearance on Thursday at a carrier plant in Indianapolis to announce their deal to keep jobs from moving to Mexico. Mr. Trump had specifically promised workers at the air conditioning plant that he would stop their employer from shutting down the plant and laying off about 2,000 workers. Critics are denouncing the deal, which will save just under 1,000 jobs, as sending a signal to other corporations that they can win government concessions simply by threatening to move factories overseas. Meanwhile, Trump has continued to name his cabinet picks, with former Goldman Sachs partner and millionaire Steve Mnuchin as Treasury Secretary and billionaire investor Wilbur Ross Jr. as Commerce Secretary. Trump appears to be ignoring his own campaign denouncements of Hillary Clinton's ties to Wall Street elites. Concerns about conflicts of interest between his business dealings and presidential duties also abound. Joining me to comment on all these issues is Bart Naylor, financial policy advocate with Public Citizens Congress Watch Division. Welcome to the program, Bart.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Let's talk about the carrier deal first. What exactly is Trump promising carrier in exchange for saving just under half the jobs that carrier said it would move to Mexico?
Well, that's not clear to me in terms of the details. One of the issues typically when negotiations such as this take place is that the company is not doesn't have to pay taxes for a number of years or is given basically tax dollars to stay. I don't know the details of that to the extent that they've been released. It's my understanding that the details have not been released fully.
Now, the company United Technologies will offshore more than 1,000 jobs still. And during his campaign, the idea was, at least that's what Trump said, was that he would impose high tariffs on companies that would outsource or offshore their jobs. But from what we understand, and this is what Senator Bernie Sanders, writing in the Washington Post on Thursday, understands that essentially he's going to be giving in to some of their concessions that they have sought in terms of tax breaks. So rather than imposing a tax on them for offshoring jobs, he is appearing to give them a tax break in exchange for keeping jobs. What sort of ripple effect could that have on the economy?
Companies extort states, and now they'll be invited to extort the federal government all of the time. In other words, a company says, hey, where will you tax me the least? Is it Tennessee? Is it Alabama? That's where I'm going to move my plant. And of course, the state where they are at, whether it's Indiana or Pennsylvania, says, okay, we are going to match that tax break. Now, what does that mean? Well, if a corporation is not paying taxes on the profits that it's earning, that means the residents who have to make up the difference. So a tax break to a company is more taxes that the average residents of that state have to pay, and now apparently the federal government.
And so in a way, has Trump endangered a wider swath of jobs by saving this very small number of jobs?
Well, so you raise a good point about scale. These are 1,000 jobs. Ideally, this is a good thing that they are now going to be preserved in Indiana. Last month, America added 180,000 jobs. So under the Obama administration, that's roughly 6,000 a day in the last month, 6,000 every day for 30 days. And we apparently had to give away a lot of tax concessions to save these 1,000 jobs. So it's a little unclear to me that this Trump strategy is sustainable and can be scaled up to where we are creating 180,000 jobs a year or a month, or according to Trump, it needs to be far more than that. So I'm not quite sure how much tax breaks are left to achieve the goals that he has cited in his campaign.
Wouldn't this essentially have the effect of decimating the federal treasury? If this is the model he applies to, you know, all jobs.
That's right. And move the burden from corporations and the slice that they pay in taxes to individuals and the burden that we're already shouldering.
So let's talk about what exactly he could have done. If, I mean, of course, the pain that Trump has tapped into is a very real one. Would you first of all say that it's been our free trade policies, sadly pushed by Democratic presidents, just as it has by Republican ones, that have created these conditions where it's easier for companies to offshore jobs? And so addressing it from a broader, longer term approach, such as either redrafting, redesigning our free trade deals or doing away with them altogether, would that be the better approach?
Public Citizen has a global trade department that is far more qualified than myself to engage in this particular conversation. But let me just say this. Carrier's parent is United Technologies, which eats or drinks at the trough of government contracts prodigiously. That is an enormous amount of leverage. Number two, the reason that Carrier is attempting to, quote, save money by moving to Mexico is such that they can generate additional profits, which are increasingly accrued by the CEO. So, for example, the CEO is getting a pension plan of something like $100 million, which is a greater amount than the annual savings, supposedly, they're going to get to go to Mexico.
Right. Well, I understand it was $65 million that they would have saved by moving these 2,000 jobs overseas, which for Carrier is not very much money at all, given that their CEO's pension plan is $100
million. That's right. I mean, in my view, CEO pay has gone from handsome to looting. And no CEO needs $100 million to get him through his golden years of retirement. You literally cannot spend that money. I mean, you would give it to your children and ruin their lives because they wouldn't need to ever work a day in their life. It literally is theft. And that kind of money really, you know, a lot needs to change. Workers need to be paid more. This race to the bottom of the lowest cost is simply a model that needs to be re-examined. And we would certainly invite the Trump administration, bold as their promises are, to consider a complete rework. Giving away tax breaks is not the way to do it, in my opinion.
Hmm. Bart, let's talk about the people that he has brought into and that he has named, rather, for his cabinet picks. Steven Mnuchin, I mentioned, he's a millionaire, former Goldman Sachs partner, now a Hollywood financier. How does this in any way align with the promises that Trump made during his campaign to work for the little guy, for Main Street rather than Wall Street? I mean, one of his biggest and probably most valid criticisms of Hillary Clinton were her close ties to companies like Goldman Sachs, where she made speeches for which she was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars.
That's exactly right. This completely contradicts a central pledge that animated not simply certain conservative Republicans, but even some Democrats who were very skeptical that Wall Street seems to run Washington. They crash the economy and they continue to rig the system that generates huge amounts of profit for individual bankers while leaving actual people, working people, Main Street, impoverished. He promised to drain the swamp. And yet with his Treasury pick and others, he is doing the very thing that he had been critical of. Steven Mnuchin, Yale graduate, Goldman Sachs banker, who collected $40 million in his 17-year career. And I don't think that's because he worked late every night. That's because bankers are able to extract money that should normally go to workers and put it in their own pocket through the complexities and stuff that we normal people can't understand. And yet, you know, there he is, $40 million richer after that. Then he goes in to run a hedge fund where he bottom fishes, you know, one of the nation's failed savings and loan, kicks 36,000 people out of their houses. This woman, a 90-year-old, was 27 cents short in making her monthly payment. That caused her to be evicted. And in the end, again, Mr. Mnuchin is able to profit. And there is a connection between 36,000 evictions and the $10 million or so that he personally profited from this deal. It takes several steps, but one area of pain, impoverishedness, leads to those wealth. Let me just emphasize that we believe that personnel is policy. It is impossible to separate how well somebody upholds policy from their actual personality. And so we're very skeptical of people coming from Wall Street with no vocabulary of what it's like to live in poor neighborhoods, of what it's like to deal with foreclosures, simply floating at 30,000 feet level and merging companies and extracting just a percent or two, which happens to be millions of dollars, and don't actually know how Main Street works. So very skeptical that Mnuchin will be a successful Treasury Secretary, and very hopeful that I will be completely wrong in that skepticism.
Well, I mean, you know, these were the kinds of picks that are even too extreme for what Clinton would have done. I mean, certainly Clinton would have probably done, you know, the kinds of Larry Summers type people that Obama brought in. People who were very close to Wall Street, but at least who had some experience in government. Does Mnuchin have any experience in government?
I believe the answer is zero. I don't even know that he's been on a school board or even been an elected official.
So basically Trump has picked someone as qualified as himself.
Yeah. I guess there is the conceit that if you can make an investment pick, and things go well because other people are actually doing the job, that you can actually run Treasury with thousands, hundreds of thousands of employees, where you can maintain the cash flow of the government by selling U.S. Treasuries, of U.S. foreign currency and international trade, of the regulation of national banks. It's an actual 9-to-5 job where you have to make operational decisions that affect not only the nation, but the global economy. It's not just let me buy this particular investment, see if things work out in the next 2 or 3 years, which has been Mnuchin's job of late, not an operational. So I find it highly conceited that Trump can think that, yeah, I can just plop down a guy because he's got a high IQ and an Ivy League pedigree, and things will turn out well. I think we should have a resume that is a little more reflective of experience, a muscular ability, a proven ability to run an actual operation.
Right. I mean, at the very least, we'd like to see experience. But then even as important is somebody who has progressive economic policies. Clinton ran on preserving the status quo. Trump was the one who pushed this message of economic populism only to actually embrace Wall Street in an even greater way than Clinton might have. But why should we be surprised? He's a billionaire. For years, free market proponents have like him have pushed this ludicrous idea that if we only had people who in government who were successful businessmen, we would have a better government because they would run the government like a business. These are two very, very different things. Let's talk about Wilbur Ross Jr., the Commerce Secretary pick, billionaire investor in distressed assets, seems to be of the same ilk as Steven Mnuchin, and also just as unqualified and inexperienced.
When I was the head of investigation for the United States Senate Banking Committee in the 1980s, we called these people raiders. They would go into companies and pilfer them. They would change their equity structure, which is sort of stock ownership, into debt. They would gut the union contract. They would terminate any of the philanthropy. They would close down the corporate headquarters and thin out employment. They would ship jobs overseas. They were called barbarians. Now they've been dressed up as private equity, distressed assets, and so forth. There are times when, and certainly many American companies are mismanaged, but I don't think the genius of private equity people who come in with no management experience is what's turning it around. They are simply taking companies and extracting value, not for actual employees of those companies, but for the investors themselves. Is this the person who should design commerce in America? Well, that wouldn't be my first choice.
Well, Senator Bernie Sanders posted a very interesting infographic asking the question, the People's Cabinet, where he listed all of the people that Trump has named for positions in his cabinet and how much they're worth. The poorest person on that list is Jeff Sessions at only $7.5 million. The richest person is Wilbur Ross, who's worth $2.5 billion. I mean, do you feel that those people who voted for Trump because he promised to shake up government and redirect and redesign policy in favor of ordinary Americans are going to feel betrayed by this? I mean, they really ought to.
Yeah, well, Trump ran on fairy dust, and some of us either believe in it or choose to believe in it. One of the problems that I feel is that I actually know very few, if you will, Trump voters. I know a lot of people who are conservatives and so forth. Very few said, I like Trump. I heard a lot of people say I didn't like Hillary. So I think a combination of animus about Hillary and this fairy dust promise is what led to the election. Although, frankly, I don't know how Trump got elected. But now that he has, will those voters see a betrayal? I don't know that it will happen in one day or one week or one month. But unless the economy is growing at 3%, unless Carrier saves all those jobs, unless the gravity of people in Mexico being paid a much lower rate, and then Thailand much lower rate than American jobs, then I'm skeptical that Trump can deliver on even a small percentage of his promises. Will he be held to account? Well, again, I'm baffled that he got elected in the first place, so I don't know that the calculation of people holding to him to account, it maybe is more of an impression. Anyway, I should have my license removed at forecasting because I've been about as wrong as possible leading up to the November elections.
Well, many of us have. Let's talk about what, you know, a big part of what we didn't think would come to pass with Trump being president is to have this person in a position who has so many business dealings around the world. Already we have seen him break so many sort of ethics boundaries with talking directly to heads of state in the Philippines, in Turkey, in Japan, where he has very obvious business dealings. And this idea that somehow he's going to separate foreign policy from his business dealings rather than use foreign policy to advance his business dealings is more fairy dust, isn't it? I mean, and also people are saying that there isn't really some major constitutional crisis because partly I understand because we've never had a president with this many business dealings worldwide before, right?
That's right. Just from 30,000 feet, conflict of interest is when if you're cutting the cake, ideally, you shouldn't get a piece at all. And if you do get a piece, you shouldn't cut it in your favor. But the best of all is you cut the cake, but you don't get any. You just try to make it fair for everybody else. Here is one of the most pressing conflicts that I am paying attention to. The mega banks committed fraud on a massive level, leading to the financial crisis and the devastation that we all faced. One of those that has yet to settle or has yet to reach conclusion with the Department of Justice is Deutsche Bank. It's a German bank, but they operated a great deal in the United States and defrauded investors a lot. There have been negotiations with the United States Justice Department looking for a settlement so large, we're talking about more than $10 billion, that it might actually be existential for Deutsche Bank, that is to say, put it out of business. Well, about two blocks from the White House is the Trump Tower, funded in no small part by Deutsche Bank, hundreds of millions of dollars. Deutsche is a creditor to Trump all over the place. Already there is a conflict, because on the one hand, you would say, well, the Obama administration would have about 4 weeks left to finally settle with Deutsche Bank and extract as strong a penalty as possible. Now, Deutsche Bank is going to say, I'm going to wait for the Trump administration. Already the conflict is a problem, because Trump owes us $300 million, and he will have to know that that dynamic will figure in the negotiations or ideally a criminal trial that might happen under a Trump administration. How is that going to happen? Already, justice is being ill-served by this problem.
Now, he has said on his Twitter feed, and it's very convenient that we can basically have the unfiltered views of the president tweeting directly to the public, basically saying that he is in the process of having legal documents being crafted that would take him completely out of business operations. He said that he feels it's visually important to in no way have a conflict of interest with my various businesses, and he is basically going to remove, he's going to be leaving his great business in total in order to fully focus on running the country. As far as you know, has he made any concrete moves in that direction? Is it all maybe too early to tell? Do you know of any real moves he's making?
I don't know. It's my understanding that he's going to reveal this on December 15th. But short of liquidation of all of his assets, where all he would know is that now he's got a bank account that's worth whatever, $1 billion, but can't be affected at all by anything he does, that nobody can whisper in his ear that, that he'll make another couple of million dollars if he just causes the English prime minister to name a friend, Nigel Farage, who is instrumental in keeping a wind farm away from his golf course. If none of that can possibly influence whether he makes a million or loses $1 million, then that is an answer.
I mean, it's this idea of putting his businesses in a blind trust to be run by his children, but then he's naming his children to his cabinet. Ivanka Trump, his daughter, has appeared inexplicably at meetings he's had with foreign leaders. I mean, all of these things, it seems like he doesn't really understand what conflict of interest means.
Definition of blind, the way you play with your two-year-old son, where you play peekaboo and they can't see you as you put your finger in front of your eye. Blind means you have no clue, and your daughter is not sitting across the dinner table sad that day, and you know she's been working on a particular deal. So I don't see that as blind. I think that as using exclamation points in dramatic fashion, disguising the fact that you've got a real problem.
Right. Bart, where's a good place for people to find out about the work you do with Public Citizen?
Our website is citizen.org. I'm a promiscuous Twitterer at Bart Naylor. We welcome viewers. We think that democracy is a daily exercise, not just the first Tuesday after the first Monday every couple of years when you go to the voting booth. And we think that holding members of Congress to account, not just this president, but the 435 House members and 100 senators to account, as well as your state lawmakers, is vital. It's why we either have jobs or don't have jobs, is to pay attention to these policymakers. So citizen.org.
Citizen.org. And you can follow my guest Bart Naylor on Twitter at Bart Naylor. Bart, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bart Naylor is the financial policy advocate with Public Citizen's Congress Watch Division. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/RU with Sonali.